For today's classical conversation, we have a few minutes with violinist Matthew Dietrich, who is the executive and artistic director of the Houston-based Apollo Chamber Players. Apollo is set to release a new album of works based on stories of censorship, and it's called Ban. Thank you very much, Matthew, for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mary. Thank you for having me.
I know we're meeting for the first time today, but I kind of feel like I've been getting to know you vicariously a little bit through a documentary video I actually came across on the Apollo Chamber Players website, and it's called Moonshot. I mentioned that for our listeners who are interested in learning more about the ensemble and its formation. But let's start with you, a little bit about your story and maybe your family as well, because I had to smile in the documentary when you described them as being a little bit like the Dietrich von Trapp family.
Yeah, thanks for asking. Yeah, I do come from a family of musicians and teachers, and very importantly to what I believe that I try to do now through Apollo, ministers and pastors. So I'm a PK, pastor's kid. My father, my grandfather, on both sides were ministers. And I feel like the growing up, you get a sense of people and interacting with people in different ways. You also have the religious aspect of that too. But I feel like I come from this, it's called Church of the Brethren. It's one of the historic peace churches. It's very community based. And for me now to lead, a nonprofit ensemble that is connecting communities and cultures through globally inspired music. And we're trying to create cultural harmony through our commissions and our work. And we do a lot of school shows as well. And I feel like that's kind of encapsulates my upbringing from, service perspective, giving back to the world, not only in music, but doing it in a way that can hopefully create, civic harmony. And understanding and empathy between people. So the other aspect to my kind of upbringing, as my mom started my brothers and I on violin when we were 3 years old. I'm the oldest of three brothers. My mom, again, was a public violin public school teacher, played the violin, and my father was the minister. He also played banjo and guitar and did more folk music. So we like to have this joke too, that my father was my mother was the first class musician, and my father was kind of the coach class musician, combining classical and folk music. So we did just that. And what Apollo does now, we mix genres, do a lot of multidisciplinary projects and commissions. And that comes from my family, mixing all these genres, classical, folk, fiddle, spirituals, that kind of thing, in front of audiences around where I come from, York, Pennsylvania, playing for being in front of audiences for many, many years since I was, 3 or 4 years old. A lot of that kind of has inspired what I've become today through Apollo Chamber Players.
Can you help us get to know some of your fellow players and how the group kind of coalesced?
Sure. Yeah, this was 2008. It was a couple of years after I graduated from Rice University with my master's degree. I also did my undergrad here, so I had already been here for a little bit. And I think that really helped me kind of get ingrained outside of the music world. When you're in music school, for those of your listeners that may be in music school right now, it's really important to kind of make connections outside of where, of your chosen field. Those friendships can really help down the road. And it also gives you, a better perspective on life outside of being, outside of the arts and music. So I met this wonderful, he was a dear friend now. His name is Costa Papanikolaou. He wasn't a musician, but he was slightly older than I and wanted some lessons. I did a lot of teaching back then, so I started teaching him lessons. And soon that evolved into a friendship, more so than teaching him Suzuki songs. and he's Greek, and he was very proud of his heritage. And, at that time I was reading about how Houston was becoming one of the most diverse cities in the nation. And kind of connecting that with classical music and composers that, were embracing their heritage. That was kind of the initial, inspiration for Apollo Chamber Players. And I must say, a buddy of mine too, Tim Peters, he was, part of the founding. And we just wanted to play chamber music. We were classmates at Rice University with a really wonderful teacher named Kenneth Goldsmith that really gave us, the tools not only to be wonderful musicians and violinists, but also kind of artists in the 21st century. He and I did a bunch of orchestral auditions. I auditioned all over the country, about 24 auditions. For those of your listeners, maybe a little bit familiar with that process, it's very tough and stressful. And, you pay your way to go, and there's, hundreds of people auditioning for one spot. I came really close to winning a couple of jobs, but I never won that job with the New York Philharmonic that took me outside of Houston. So I almost won this one job in Charleston, and I remember, after that, I just was in a total funk, and I said, I got to do something else. And I talked to my friend Tim, and also Costa, and this gentleman Costa offered to underwrite the first concert of Apollo Chamber Players. That kind of evolved into a season, and a few years later, we became a part of this, some of the foundations in Houston and arts agencies that were supportive of us when we were young, kind of taught us not only fundraising and that kind of thing, but help us build a board. It's a lot of small steps that combine after, many years into a large organization. And I must say too, just to kind of wrap that up, it was about 4 or 5 years into it when we started the commissioning process. And our first commission, Fantasy on Bulgarian Rhythms, by Karim Alzan. He was a professor of mine at Rice, and that explored these really fascinating Bulgarian mixed meter rhythms and folk music. And we had this concert, had a lot of the Bulgarian community there. We also did some Czech music, and just really seeing people come to the come be engaged with a concert that had never been to a classical, quote unquote classical music concert before, and came because of their heritage. I thought that we were onto something new. That eventually led to our big 20 by 2020 commissioning project, which was kind of the idea behind, it was a big moonshot goal at that point to commission 20 works by the end of the decade. We worked with wonderful composers from Jennifer Higdon to Jared Tate, the American Indian composer, with our Moonstrike commission, as well as, some up and coming younger composers as well that we discovered through commissioning contests and that sort of thing. And it was really kind of the boldness and the reach of that program that set us on the path to where we are today. We had to finish it during the pandemic, which was a challenge. And I feel like since then, we've actually almost tripled the amount of commissions that we've brought into this world, and now we have over 60 new music commissions by a diversity of composers from around the world. But also, we're really honing into the talent and the creatives that we have here in Houston, Texas, as well.
Tell me more about the repertoire that you bring forward in your newest album, The Stories of Censorship.
This is Apollo's 8th commercial album, and I do feel like in many ways it's our most meaningful album. It's definitely the boldest in terms of kind of reaching into the times in which we live and making a little bit of a statement, but I think it's more, these are, collections of newly commissioned music that explore what happens when voices, whether that's artistic or cultural or personal, are silenced. Each of the pieces on this album, explore these stories of censorship, from Japanese American internment to book banning, which unfortunately was, a hot topic here in Texas a few years back, to the erasure of women's voices under oppressive regimes and the revision of historical truths, which I think revisionism is a really insidious form of censorship, particularly as it relates to, those of persons of color. And I think, ultimately this album is about our human desire to express and to push back through the arts when it's needed.
I'm interested to hear more of your thoughts on the role of contemporary classical music in our society. And I'm thinking about even a couple of years ago, through the pandemic here at the station, we actually expanded our classical music offerings as a way to hopefully be a refuge for people during just really challenging and isolating times. Certainly, we still strive to be that daily source of inspiration. But here we're talking about music that is also has that educational piece to it. Almost like you're channeling the music as a social barometer. Would you say that's, is that fair to say?
Sure, I mean, these are all living issues. But what I feel is most important too is giving the composers and the creatives that we've collaborated with, giving them a creative voice to tell their story. I feel like now more than ever, it's really important to, I mean, I think we've always been giving back, but that's even more important to kind of cultivate the creativity in others who have a voice, in the messiness of democracy, if you will.
The opening piece, the Book of Names, you actually circle back to at the end. What's happening there?
This was a piece we commissioned by Marty Regan. He's a faculty composer at Texas A&M. He was one of our first commission pieces with Splash of Indigo, which connected Japanese folk music and French Impressionism. He's a scholar of Japanese music. And 2 years ago, our whole theme of the season was around silence voices and censorship. And the main piece is also on this album. This is by Deborah Deep Mouton and Jasmine Barnes around the revisionism of Black history. And about 2 weeks, I mean, literally 2 weeks before this concert in February of 2024 at the Holocaust Museum, Marty Regan contacted me and said, "Hey, I love your silence voices. I'm sorry I haven't been in touch, but would you be open for me writing you something around Japanese internment?" Because that was a censorship of identity during World War II and one of the big black marks on American history. And I said, "You know what? Let's do it, Marty, even though we don't have a lot of time." So he wrote this wonderful piece called The Book of Names, originally for string quartet. There's a moment, there's a climax where then the quartet starts reading the names of those that were interned, which I think is very powerful. And in the original concert presentation, we had a visual scrolling of the names behind us as we performed, which I think also added a powerful element. After that concert, we had so many people in the audience, amazingly, that said they recognized names in the scroll. And that was just another kind of way that illustrates, you know, history and living history in a way, right? So it was about a week after that concert, I was biking on our bayou here in the park with my son and my wife, and it hit me like a bolt of lightning, this idea that we had to get George Takei involved in this project. The really meaningful part of that was getting him, or pitching to his management, for him to say his name and his family names at the end of that presentation of the speaking of the names. I thought that would be really meaningful. You know, and obviously George Takei is now 88 years old. He's had a wonderful and rich career in history as an activist. And also, you know, as a Trekkie myself, I love him through all of his Star Trek work. But I think that actually is the mission and vision of Star Trek also is synergistic with Apollo, but also with what George has become and kind of those values of, you know, the human rights values that are so, part and parcel of the Star Trek story. So I pitched this to his manager in New York City. Once those pieces came into place, then in October of last year, we did the world premiere with George. George created a narrative story to go along with this. It talks a little bit about his internment experience, being a boy, you know, being taken to the internment camps and kind of losing that identity, and how that has inspired his life of activism through all of his work and what he's doing so passionately. So it was really special to have him part. And I think, you know, we wanted to include the original version and the version with string quartet to kind of bookend the pieces with, you know, the beautiful music that Marty created, but to give kind of a through line of George's continued inspiration for, you know, an advocacy for what democracy means despite what happened to his family. And that's kind of a through line throughout the entire album.
In 1988, President Ronald Reagan, on behalf of the people of the United States, signed the Civil Liberties Act and officially apologized for the internment and paid redress of $20,000 to the survivors who were still alive at the time of the signing of the bill. Our democracy is a precious ideal that requires all of us as Americans to actively engage with it, to keep it strong and true and shining.
Am I correct in remembering there are a couple other pieces on the album that came from the Silent Voices series as well?
That's right. We work with DJ Spooky, Paul Miller, a really wonderful DJ artist that's been around for a couple of decades doing some really amazing, innovative classical music, kind of combining classical music and rock and DJ artistry. So this is a piece that we premiered in the Planetarium here in Houston as part of our Silent Voices season. This is called Quantopia or The Thought Police, and this is rooted in George Orwell's 1984, Paul recorded some electronics and his voice narration to go along with this. I think it's very moving music too. and also the Revise, which I mentioned, is kind of a revision of the Black experience. This was one of our first works to collaborate with a spoken word poet. Deborah Deep Mouton was the first Black female Houston, poet laureate of Houston a number of years ago, and she's just become a voice for what's going on right now, how we can kind of uplift not only communities of color, but everyone through her words. So it's a very powerful work, and I think the combination of, you know, string quartet, it also uses a chorus of 8 Black singers, and, you know, I think that kind of the call and response between her and the chorus with the musical, the undergirding of the beautiful music, there's a lot of text painting as well. I feel like it's kind of like a little chamber opera too, so I'm very proud of that piece and the performance. To kind of wrap in a piece I didn't talk about yet on the album Fog Bell, this is by Turkish composer Erbek Erilmaz. This was another commission that happened about a month before the premiere. We did this in this past January during our, you know, the We the People series. This is a concert about opportunity and immigrants from all over the world coming to the United States for kind of live the dream of America as this land of opportunity where dreams are possible. And so Erbek Erilmaz was one of our initial winner. He was the winner of our first commission contest in 2014. Our piece from him is called Thracian Heirs of Besame Sultan. That was, I think that piece kind of put us on a map in a different way with that part of the world, or the music from that part of the world. So he's been a wonderful friend and collaborator. So I approached him about a piece. And unfortunately, so he did his studying at Rice University here and lived in Houston for a time, but then he moved back and is teaching it in Ankara at a university that connects Western music and Turkish folk music. So he's doing what he always dreamed. However, he was asked to perform at the Presidential Palace. They asked him to censor and change his music, and he refused to do so. So the concert was canceled. So he obviously he had a living embodiment of kind of what happens to an artist when they're censored and how they can fight back. Then he came back with this piece for us called Fog Bell, which is inspired by a Turkish poet that was also censored and his poems were banned in the 1950s.
Vazifeye atılmak için içinde bulunacağın vaziyetin imkan ve şeraitini düşünmeyeceksin.
This gave us more inspiration and courageousness to release this album, symbolizing artists as warning signals in turbulent times, and how we can all fight back in a way that will hopefully inspire others to do the same. I don't want to leave any pieces out because all of our commissions are like our babies. We have a special relationship to each of them that we help birth and come into the world. Something that has been very rewarding for us is that now, you know, other younger quartets and groups are taking some of these pieces and performing them themselves. And that's kind of a really wonderful thing to kind of put new music and new art into the world that then takes its own life. So it's a really rewarding, you know, aspect. And then, of course, these relationships that we have with these composers and the art and these artists. The Afghan American composer Humayun Saki wrote us a piece called Arman. Ironically, this is the most hopeful piece on the album, yet it comes from somebody that has experienced such turbulence and such violence from the moment from the moment he was a child. When we recorded this in February, we premiered it a couple of years ago, but then we recorded for this album this past February, and he told me this story where we were driving around. He said that when he was 8 years old, his best friend was shot and killed right next to him. I mean, he could have been right there, right? And just to think about how good we have in the United States, that with all of our political divisions, we don't have to worry about that kind of violence, and I hope that we don't have to. So, you know, I guess to kind of wrap things up too, I on a more hopeful note, Arman means hope in Farsi. And it was very inspiring. No matter what we're going through here in the United States, we can have hope that, things will get better. And it's been very special to kind of have that hope uplifted in all of us, and hopefully through this music and through your listeners, by somebody that has lost so much and still remains hopeful.
We've been speaking with violinist Matthew Dietrich on the latest Apollo Chamber Players album, Stories of Censorship, as a call to cherish and defend our freedom of expression. Very good speaking with you, Matthew. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Mary.